We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Understanding Rudyard Part 3 by Leila Rayal. This was the first talk on Saturday morning, September 24, 1983, at the RITA conference in Palo Alto, California. This recording is 30 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. And now, Leila Rayal.
So, that sense of relationship to a much larger collective personal transcending frame of reference gives a sense of meaning to those potentialities that we want to call my. And the mire we call them, the more frustrated we are in the actualization of them. So for Rudyard, the first step, in a sense, especially for Americans, especially for those of us of sort of my generation, our generation today, is to develop that new mind that can become objective to those collective pressures. It's a very interesting thing in our society that while we place a tremendous emphasis on personal psychology, individual fulfillment, the actualization of personal potentials, personal growth, and all of that, we do so because this has become a collective ideal, which is very individualization as a collective ideal, or individualism as a collective ideal, is a very big catch-22, if you've ever thought about it. I mean, in a way, it was easier to really individualize for those few people who did during the medieval period or the Renaissance, because there was not that collective ideal of individualism. You just were out of sync and out of step, and you led part of your life, which Rudyard often talks about the alchemists, who were people who were individualizing their minds, developing on the noetic level, at the level at which the noosphere of the planet Earth operates, this kind of structured mind that could operate according to principles. Don't forget, they came before Bacon and the scientific movement. There was something happening on that less tangible, more subtle level of the mind that perhaps created a template, an archetypal template, for the scientific type of mentality to develop on. But these were people who essentially led double lives, who went to work and performed their social functions as merchants or noblemen or whatever they were, during the daytime, and then withdrew to private locked-up rooms in the night in their homes to pursue what they felt was their real destiny. And there have been many, many people like that all throughout history who didn't leave great books, who didn't lead a nation, who didn't do all sorts of things, and yet who are part of this process as we are today. And for Rudyard, the main development that feeds that process is the development of this new mind, the feeding of this collective noetic level that enables one to operate at a level that transcends personal emotions, that includes and yet transcends personal emotions, that is clear on a mental level, that can function within these frames of reference, such as the cycle. Now, to my mind, the developing of that kind of mind can happen basically through reading Rudyard's work. That has been, for me, the main sort of path. That doesn't mean, obviously, that that is for everyone, the way that happens. And that also doesn't mean that that's the only thing that I've read or the only thing that I've been attuned to. But I find that, for me, the kind of process that Rudyard's mind goes through when he is writing is, for my mind, an ideal educational process. Now, I learned that long before I met Rudyard, when I became enamored of the tables of contents in his books. I'm a table of contents freak. And I think that you can see, you can get a really good idea of what's happening in a book and in an author's mind from the table of contents. I was so impressed by Rudyard's tables of contents. Truly. Because there's a structure there, and the whole key to the book, even the most difficult ones, especially people have the most trouble with planetarization, I think, But the key to the whole thing is in the table of contents. And if you meditate on the table of contents, you will understand the book when you get around to reading it, just by seeing the structure and understanding how everything fits in. But since the title of this session this morning is Understanding Rudyard, let me say the one thing, please, please, the one thing that you must do with Rudyard's work is that you must read them from beginning to end. After you've done that, and after you've really understood what's in there, then you can pick and you can Bible oracle with it, and you can get something significant in that way. But to really understand, it's not so much, it's not Rudyard as a person, but to really understand that action of mind, that possibility for training and disciplining the mind that comes through his writings, you must go from beginning to end. You don't have to do it all in one sitting, and it's obviously better if you don't, you get overload. But you really must follow, because he's not a dogmatic writer. He's not saying, this means that, means the other thing. Now, several years ago, and I won't mention the people's names involved because it'll embarrass them. Several years ago, it's sort of as a forerunner to Rita in a way. We had a small seminar that met once a week in our living room, and it was for the purpose of studying planetarization of consciousness. And the people who came were people who had been involved in around, it was actually started by someone who was going to university and who wanted credit for, who could get credit for studying with Rudyard and for studying his books. So he started this thing and got me all moving on it and never showed up. That's again how those things happen. But we started reading Planetarization, and the first week was to read part one. I mean, it was longer than a week. They had a couple of weeks to do it. And then to come and discuss about what part one of the book was all about. And it was a very difficult process because nobody could really say what part one was all about. And Rudyard and I were sort of sitting there, and everyone was kind of hemming and hawing and trying to say, oh, about this, how this develops, the ego develops, and the role of this or the role of that. But it was all this kind of catching as catch can. And I kept telling them, no, you're not reading. You're not reading. And finally I got very annoyed. This was after several weeks of this. And I said, none of you know how to read. And I said, you know what happens? This is how you read, Rudyard. You read along, and if you see the pattern visual with these things, you see the page in front of you, and there's writing on the pages, and it's white, and it's the words are gray. It's not even really black ink, but it's gray, and it goes along. And then, all of a sudden, there's a short declarative sentence, and in your mind, yellow marker, and that sentence stands out. And then you read along, and there's a bunch more of these gray words, and then you come upon another one of those yellow sentences. You know, the college textbook mentality. And they began to realize that, yes, that was essentially what was happening. That was their experience of reading Rudyard. And that the continuity of all that gray stuff in between, they really never even asked themselves, why does he have all that here? Because I'm not getting it. And I think, thinking back, the reason that I could say that to them, was because that was my experience when I first started reading Rudyard. And there was all these gray sentences broken by large slashes of yellow, short, but very brilliant. Okay. So one of the things that you have to do with Rudyard's work is that you have to have a dialogue with it. When you don't understand something, you have to, number one, be aware that you don't understand. You have to be vigilant. You have to be mindful in the Buddhist sense. You have not to let your eyes just skim over the words and your mind to accept the grammatical structure of the sentences. A perfect example of that, I don't know whether any of you have noticed, but in one of the new editions of the Planetarization of Consciousness, in the foreword, when it went to the typesetter, there's a wonderful sentence that makes perfect grammatical sense and says absolutely nothing. No one called it to our attention. What happened was, is that as the typesetter was typesetting, he reached the end of something, or as the person who was gluing the book, the type together, reached the end of something, a page of one of the galleys fell on the floor. And the end of another sentence, a page down the road, got hooked on to the end of this not sentence, and it went on. And there's a page and a half of text missing in between. However, it makes perfect grammatical sense. There's a subject, there's a verb, makes perfect sense, but it says nothing because there's a page and a half missing in between. Pardon me? It is included in the new book, and anyone who wants a Xerox of the page and a half of it, I will give you.
and no one brought it up.
Who knows?
How did you find it?
I'm trying to remember. How did we find it?
Rudyard found it.
Yeah. Is that, did Rudyard find it?
It was the only one.
Listen, no, Joseph just brought something to our attention last night. You have to realize, when a book is published, everyone in the household has been through that book 17 times. We never want to read that book again. That's not so. But we have been through the book a lot. I very rarely have read through from cover to cover the printed editions of the books. First of all, it's very painful to see all the typographical errors you missed when you did the proofs, but they're always there. There was, last night, Joseph came home with a copy of the new edition of Occult Preparations for a New Age. They redid the cover. And the binding is Occult Preparations. And no one saw it. Because the book comes, you know, it's a new cover, and you just don't, we don't look at it. But anyway, that is true. In the later editions, it has been corrected. And I think Joseph's probably right, is that Rudyard was one day looking to make notes or something for planetarization and saw that it was missing. There are all sorts of other things. There's an endless loop in culture crisis and creativity. It does end somewhere, but it's a paragraph that breaks in a funny way that then they recycle the same galley stuff that goes. Now, there are a number of people who pointed that out to us, so that was good. But that can really do your mind a number, that you're reading along and you find yourself folded back in and you wonder how you're going to get out of it.
Vigilant.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think from here on, the books that Rita publishes, we're going to plant these things. Okay. But the idea is, they're really seriously, these are all illustrations of all of our, and I'm telling stories on myself as well as on everyone else, is to really try to concentrate and realize those things are in there, and you can be the first to write and tell us about them. And the other thing that has been for me the most helpful in really learning how to understand Rudyard is, in my mind, to edit Rudyard. If you don't understand something, I mean, he said it, fiddle with the sentence in your mind. Why did he say it that way? Do you remember? This is one thing that they taught you in school. You know, they taught you how to parse sentences, right? It's a totally useless skill, right? Wrong. It's very useful. It's extremely useful. Parse the sentence. The subject, the verb, that orders it. You know, if you get stuck, do that. And then see how you would change it to make it more understandable to you. And then you'll find, what you find is that any way you will change it, you'll see how you alter its meaning. And therefore you see how it has to be said the way it is, and therefore you understand what it says.
Right.
That's really true.
Mm-hmm. And that was just something that I learned along the way. And also, in terms of anything that you don't understand, always ask yourself, Rudyard never puts extra things in. Sometimes I think they're extra. Mm-hmm. And I ask him about it, and then when he explains to me why it's that way, then I understand. They're very rarely totally extra things. You have to ask, why is that there? What is he trying to say by that? And not let your mind just slide over it. Oh, I know that. Take it for granted. But really go into it and find out, each and every sentence, what is it doing? And then when you read the chapter, or when you read a part of a book, then stand back and essentially tell it back to yourself. What was this chapter or this part contributing to the whole? What was the reason for it there? This may sound elementary to some of you, but I think it's a really important thing that we tend to forget in a society where we're inundated with new books, where a lot of us in professional life, whatever, have to read an awful lot of material just to keep up with information. But what Rudyard is doing and what we're talking about is the development of a new mind is not feeding it with information. It's putting it through a training process, putting one's own mind through a process of training to develop it along certain lines. It can be done through reading, but again, it is not reading for information. It's reading to go through a process of discipline and training and focusing for the mind. Now, Rudyard's definition of mind is that mind is formed consciousness. Consciousness being, generally speaking, rather diffuse. And we all have a good diffuse general consciousness that you need to know what's happening behind you and around you and aware of physical balance, physical attitude in the world. All of those kinds of things are part and important in terms of diffuse consciousness. Yet within that diffuse consciousness can be an area that becomes focused like a lens. That image of the lens that Rudyard has always used, that when the lens is ground and polished and brought to a sharp focus, the light that passes through that can ignite something, can burn, can cause transformation. Okay.
I've noticed in reading Rudyard that at times when it really works, it's a door to a consciousness. In other words, I get high. I just literally feel in a different place because I have entered, in a sense, his focus, his lens. And I can look around after I've been reading for a while, and things make a different kind of sense.
But the idea then is to step into that process and to train your mind to work in the same way so that eventually... You don't, in a sense, you don't have to read Rudyard, but that the principles that are working through his mind work in yours also. And then you see things
in that
way.
Illuminate other people's work.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
It's interesting. So for me, it has been a very long process of focusing to understand reading Rudyard from a very diffuse intuition of it. So
yes.
It's taking about some 8 or 9 years to get gradually more precise. And to understand it more, reading the same book, it's a slow process of focusing from very an immediate intuition and understanding, but which couldn't connect with the words. And the two were quite opposite. I could read the words and know them in the one hand, and have the intuition in the other, but they didn't somehow meet.
Yes.
Slowly
in integration. Rudyard talks about that. He often wonders, especially, for example, with books like Triptych, which seems to be a great favorite for many people, where there is a tremendous heart response, a feeling response, an intuitive response to the book. And it does have a poetic style, so it's different from planetarization kind of thing. And you have to approach it in a different way, but it also taking a long time to bring together those two levels, the mental and the feeling intuitional. Yeah, well, congratulations for sticking with it. No, and one will either do that or not. I mean, it either, in a sense, is important enough that it resonates to you so that you do it, or if it's not, then it's not your path, you know. And yet it does take a kind of perseverance and a willingness to go through that process. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
For you, which book did you actually start on? I'm sure there wasn't an actual start, but for the novitiate, would you start with one that would be a little easier to understand? You said the planetarization was, for most people, more difficult.
It is. Well, see, I started in the astrology books. The first book of Rudyard's that I read was The Practice of Astrology. And I didn't understand it at the time. And I didn't even know that I didn't understand it at the time. That makes it worse. But I knew. But I knew that was the approach to astrology, that I would go along that path. And then at that point, I was reading anything of his that I could get my hands on, and there wasn't much in print. They were just beginning to come out of Holland, the old Cervieri editions of things, and I would eagerly await every book and then gobble it up. You know, that sort of carnivorous, I had a terrible time, I'm still not done with it, but taming that carnivorous intellect of mine, and it would just go through the books, and at such lightning speed, I wonder now, really, what did I ever get out of it? And then have to go over and over and over again. And my way of doing it at the time was to make notes, because I do have trouble controlling I read very quickly, and it was something they did to me, and I went to speed reading classes. That was the thing that you were supposed to do, right? To be able to read fast and get through college and all of that. And once you get trained to do that, it's very hard to slow your mind down and think, because you can't think that way. You can read a novel that way, you know, but you can't really read a philosophy book or something like that way. So what I did was to take notes and I made diagrams and filled up notebooks of. I outlined all the books from scratch, made outlines, and took notes. And then I divided things into subjects, particularly in learning astrology, divide things into subjects and had different colors for the different books because they overlap. You know, like, for example, in Triptych, where he deals with gifts of the Spirit, that's dealing with the signs. Pulse of Life has a totally different approach to the sign. So I made pages for the signs and, you know, did a little thing that way of organizing. And I really don't remember the order in which it came. I do know that very early on, I did have a copy. It was actually a first edition, one of the white first editions of Planetarization of Consciousness that I tried reading that, I mean, I just couldn't get through it. The only sense I could make, the first chapter, forget it. The second chapter I got interested in because I was interested in psychology, and that talked about the development of the ego. But as far as I could tell, it basically said the same thing that I already knew at the time. But then there was all this other stuff there that it seemed a very roundabout way of saying something that was very simple, because I couldn't figure out what was all that other stuff doing there because I couldn't understand it. I mean, I didn't see that it was a totally different frame of reference from the kind of psychological frame of reference that I was used to. And it took a long time to be able to see that, of attempted writing. And basically what kept me at that was that my feeling, it was the same thing also with trying to understand Rudyard's music. My feeling was that I had such respect for him in his astrological work and interpretation that the rest of this that I couldn't understand must be important. And it was worth kind of plugging away at, that he couldn't be so brilliant over here. Do you know what I mean? And incomprehensible over here that it must be me. So now, in terms of recommending books for people, it depends on the person. It depends on if they have an interest in astrology, and then I would oftentimes I do start people out with either Pulse of Life or a practice of astrology. And in terms of philosophy, the rhythm of human fulfillment is a kind of recension and more poetic presentation of much of what is in Planetarization. It's shorter, it's less intimidating. It's rather more mystical almost. And that sometimes is easier. Another thing, other books that are good, Culture, Crisis, and Creativity is a good one also. It deals with culture, with the arts. You get a lot of the basic concepts, but in different forms in that. And that's oftentimes a good starter for people. Yeah.
If you would publish your outline in the form of an index, I would pay a handsome price for it.
My outline?
Yes. There's none of Rudyard's works are indexed.
Oh, yes. No, that's not true. All of Rudyard's works since I've been around are indexed because I've done the indexes. I know, yeah. All of the works, Culture Crisis, Beyond Individualism, what else? The new books? The Magic of Tone and the Art of Music. All of the new books, all of the books since 1975 have had indexes because I've done them all. I and volunteers. Yeah. There was a project we thought about that of publishing it a volume of indexes, but we couldn't interest a commercial publisher in it, and Rita didn't exist at the time. And, you know, eventually when they all go back in, if somebody wants to volunteer to index astrology of personality... Someone did, and it was done, and this man has disappeared, so I don't know what's become of the index. Let's take a break for a few minutes. Stand up and stretch, and then come back. Maybe until a quarter of. How's that? Before we leave this idea of the development of a new mind, I'd like to address the other side of the question for a moment, which is that for those of us who have come up through the ranks of the consciousness movement, so-called, you know that there has been, and rightly so, to a certain extent, understandably so, let's say, in Western society, a great kind of distrust and rebellion against the development of the mind. It's obvious that the particular use that Western culture has put the mind in terms of science and technology has been a greatly mixed blessing. Some people would say a blessing nonetheless, and other people would stress the much more mixed and unreservedly destructive and difficult aspects of what that technology and the mind behind it has produced. But several years ago, also out of that group of people who studied planetarization, a member of the group, who unfortunately is not here today, Sandra Maitri, wrote a very beautiful paper. And there's a paragraph here that I think paraphrases Rudyard's intent very beautifully, so I thought I would read it to you. And she says here, "By contacting the work of Dane Rudyard and reading The Planetarization of Consciousness, A Necessity to Understanding Rudyard's Philosophy, I began to see that next step," meaning in her life. "It is a synthesis of the dialectical process my life has taken, which is more or less a representation of the collective generational trend. Instead of moving away from the mind in the reaction so prevalent today in the consciousness movement, from the, quote, touchy-feelies to isolation in a monastic cell, Rudyard is saying, look, this mind is the product of a vast and slow development over centuries. And yes, the way it's being used today are destructive, but it has a purpose, a vast cosmic purpose. And you can use it in a different way that, in fact, encompasses both Western and Eastern approaches to life. Let us use this mind that has been produced by the process of individualization and resultingly has become atomistic, with the obvious results in our world situation today, and take it beyond that phase of its development and use it holistically. Let us take this next step in human evolution and think larger, more inclusive thoughts. Let us move beyond isolation and alienation and realize our wholeness." And I thought that was a very beautiful paragraph because it ties together many things that are in the experience of many of us and also points to, again, this idea of a cyclic process, the idea that what is necessary at any particular phase in a process may have difficult or destructive results, which are perhaps the inevitable byproducts, the sort of tragic necessity, karma, of that process, and yet also has potentially creative, positive, and transformative results. Another concept, image, idea, that goes along with the idea of cycle, which to me is really at the root of Rudyard's work, is the term that I used in its negative sense, in terms of tragic necessity. But the idea of the need is that for Rudyard, often he's said, he's rewritten the first line of the opening of the Gospel of John, which says, "In the beginning was the Word." And Rudyard has suggested that really what it might better read is, "In the beginning was the need." It was just 2 days ago also, we were in the kitchen fixing lunch, and I told Rudyard I would sneak this in because he didn't find a place to put it, but he said he had to find a place to put it. Rudyard's an inveterate punner, and he loves playing games with words. And he came in the kitchen and he announced that he had realized that "in the beginning was the need," N-E-E-D, is an anagram for Eden, E-D-E-N. And he was very pleased with that. But the idea there being that everything is what it is and happens the way it happens and the way it does because a need for it exists. I found it very interesting in Rudyard's talk last night that one of the things he started out talking about, transformation, change. And then toward the end of his talk, he made the statement, "But it's foolish to try and change anything." Did you all catch that? I thought that was very interesting. And the relationship between those two things, because it's not a paradox in the classic sense of mutually exclusive kind of things. It's that if one sees that in the cosmic ecology, at a certain time, there is a need for change, the potentiality for change is there, and therefore one must respond to it. But that essentially one doesn't have to think it up from whole cloth and start from scratch and create change. One only responds to the need for change. Personally, in terms of our own lives, when people do, oftentimes people first exposed to Rudyard's work and to astrology, want to come and have their chart read because they want someone to tell them what their dharma is. You know, it reminds me, do you remember the old program on TV, Mission Impossible? You know, where you got it all laid out for you. This is what was going to happen, the consequences, and they couldn't help you. Right? But it's not that way at all. Is that dharma, the need that one is born to fulfill, What one has to do is respond to the circumstances of one's life, to meet them head on, to allow them to elicit from one the change that is required, that is part of the larger process of change in the world, and that it is not something that one thinks up from scratch and sets out to do. That's the ego, the sense of pride, or whatever, that we want to live a significant life, and therefore we have to think up what is significant. But essentially, what we're called upon to do is to make the facts of our own life, whatever they are, in the culture that we find ourselves, the particular problems or circumstances that we are confronted with, to make them significant, not to take significance off a shelf somewhere and try to establish it as something separate in our lives, but to make significant what we are already facing, to respond to the need for change by, as Rudyard talked about, ennobling it, ritualizing it, actually.
This is the end of Understanding Rudyard Part 3 by Leila Rayal. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.